Today we are in the Absolute Monastery, and it's Saturday, the 11th of December, 1999. And we have a provocative title for our talk today. The title is Wise Up. Now, what do you think that means, to wise up? A lot of times we go through life making commitments, making statements, making accusations, making determinations of things that are important for us, and then somebody comes along and says, hey, do you know what you're saying? Do you know what you're really doing when you're making those statements? Do you know what you're really condoning or commissioning to happen? Do you really know? Perhaps you ought to wise up a little bit. You ought to consider what you're really meaning by the things that you're saying and doing. Because the world doesn't ignore what you're saying. The world is absolutely aware of everything that we say, everything that we do. The world is absolutely responsive to everything that we do. I was only kidding. Have you ever heard that statement? I make it to you too. I was only kidding. Okay, now everybody get down on the floor. I was only kidding. Okay, now everybody give me a big smile. I was only kidding. Okay, now everybody, act like God. Do you know how to act any other way? Why are you not surprised? Why don't you act like God? Now, you were all saying to me that you're ready for the School of the Masters. And you're all saying to me that you are responsible people. You're all saying to me that you want to do the School of the Masters more than anything in the world, because it sounds like it'd be very rewarding. Well, it's not rewarding. It's not rewarding at all. It's revealing. It's very revealing. Because in the School of the Masters, you're expected to do everything you're told to do. Now, did I say to you a moment ago, get down on the floor? If you were in the School of the Masters consciousness, you would have instantly gotten down on the floor. But Herb, that's silly. Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. What other techniques do I have to work with other than what might be considered silly techniques? And I say, act like God. And you all had sort of a bemused expression on your face, like, yeah, how do you act like God? Well, who do you think you are? Who do I think you are? Sylvia called, Ilse rather, called up the other day, today, and she says, Herb, I goofed again. Did I lose your friendship? And I said, Ilse, what do you think I am? I said, Ilse, you never had my friendship. I have never been your friend. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? I've never been your friend. I've never been anyone's friend. I love everyone unconditionally. I think everyone in my entire world is absolutely fantastic, magnificent. I think everyone in my world is faultless. How about that? I think that everyone in my world is really a magnificent person, and I love them very much. Unconditionally. But to be a friend is supposed to overlook the faults of the other. I don't even know you have any. A friend is supposed to stand up for another when they're having troubles and tribulations. I don't even know you're having troubles and tribulations. I just see you all fantastically, gloriously perfect. I hope you don't mind. But I mean, that's what unconditional love is. Unconditional love does not judge in the slightest. And I said, Ilse, you want me to be your friend, or do you want me to unconditionally love you? Oh, unconditionally love. I said, well then, stop acting as though you are someone who could say something wrong in my world. You do things that are a little different sometimes, but that's your business. Not one person on the face of this earth does something without expecting a response. You pick up something off the floor expecting a response. You pick up, say, some nails that are lying on the floor, tacks. You know, tacks are little nails. And you pick them up off the floor, and you think to yourself, that's good, now no one's going to step on them. Now let me wipe my hand over here to make sure there's not some that are hidden. Whoops! Yep, there's one that was hidden. And we pick it up. Now, are you doing this so that no one will walk on them? No. Are you doing them so you won't walk on them? Yes. Are you doing them because you feel you'd like to pick up those tacks and you don't want to leave those tacks lying on the rug? Yep. Are you doing it to make your mother happy? Nope. You're doing it to make anybody happy? Nope. Why are you doing it all? You're doing it because you want to do it. Because it makes you feel just fine to do it. You remember the experience Stefan reminds us about. When he first came to campus, one of his tests was to pick up nails and screws and things from the dirt, because they had been dropped in the dirt outside of the shed where we kept the nails and things like that. And he thought to himself, what a stupid job to do, you know. What a belittling job to do. And then as he picked up the nails, he began to realize, hey, this isn't really so bad. And he picked up the nails. And I said, you sure you got them all? Oh yes, I got them all. Now if I come there and find any, then, you know, you're going to have to do it all over again. Oh! And did I find any? Yeah, I found them. But you see, the thing is, when you do it for yourself, you don't leave any nails on the ground. You don't leave any tacks there. You break a glass in the kitchen on the linoleum, and so you sweep it up. And you think, good. And then you say, no, I better check. I better check. So you look underneath the edges of the cupboards. You look underneath the edges of the stove and the refrigerator and whatever else you may have there in the kitchen. And you look very carefully. And you reach under there, not so much with your finger as with something to brush it out. Because if you catch your finger on a piece of glass, it's not too pleasant. So you bring it, and lo and behold, more pieces appear. More pieces appear which could disturb someone else later. Are you concerned that it will disturb someone else later? No, you aren't. That's just your ostensible statement that you're making to make it look as though you're a humanly desirable person, but you're not doing it for anybody else. You're not doing it for anybody else. You're doing it 100% for yourself, because that's the way you are. I told you about my shoveling the sidewalk and how I'd shovel it to the very edge and make a nice straight line. Sometimes I'd even have the snowbank go straight up for 2 or 3 feet, straight up. I didn't make it curved out and, you know, shoved out. I made it straight up so people would be walking through this tube. And I did it because I like to do it. I visualize myself walking through there with these straight up pieces of snow on each side. It was fun. It was fun. I did it for me. You say, well, Herb, you told us that You wanted to make it nice for the neighbors. When they walked by your house, the snow would always be shoveled. You'd always take ashes from the furnace and you'd put them out there when it was real icy and you couldn't get the ice up, because you didn't have salt in those days for that. And so you did all these things so that no one would slip. Really? Who was I concerned about? I was an artist creating a piece of art. And I create that piece of art for myself. And if that piece of art is shoveling snow with a nice straight snowbank on each side, it's for me. And if a little bit of snow falls down, I reach down, pick it up, and put it away, you know. I'm doing this because it's a piece of my artistic work. I was 10 years old, and I was having a time of my life. And nobody came along and talked to me while I was working, because I didn't create them doing it. I created everybody not being around while I was doing my work. It was like 5 o'clock in the morning. I got out before anybody else got out there so that they wouldn't trample the snow down and make my work harder. Not so that the neighbors could have a nice easy walk, but because I had a job to do that I was proud of doing. I did it for myself. And you do these things for yourself. Stephen talks about proofreading the gist, and he wants to make sure it's as perfect as it can be. Is he making sure it's perfect for the reader? The reader doesn't care whether the gist is perfect or not. The reader reads the gist. If there are no errors in the gist, the reader doesn't stop and say, there are no errors in the gist. He just takes that as a matter of course. If there are errors in the gist, the reader will say, huh, somebody didn't catch this one, somebody didn't catch that one. Huh. But he doesn't care. Who cares? The person who's creating the gist, the person who's writing the gist, the person who's typesetting the gist, the person who is doing the graphic arts on the gist. That person creates it as a piece of art that they're working with. It's not so much that it has to be out at a certain time, although that's part of the art too. It's an idea that it is as perfect as that person conceives himself to be. And that is wonderful. That is wonderful. Sylvia always wanted to use her creative imagination on the gist, and she'd say, can I do this, can I do that? And I'd say, no. Why did I say no? Because if Sylvia really wanted to do it, she would give me a sample of what she wanted to do, and she'd say, how is this and how is that? And when she did give samples, most of the time I said, fine. But the point is, Sylvia is doing it for herself. She's not doing it for me. She wants to present me with her ideas so that she can do it, but she's doing it for herself. And when she does it for herself, what happens? Miracles happen. When she does it to please somebody else, what happens? It's a mishmash thing. Every time we try to please somebody else, it's a mishmash. So we do our very best to put out our very best at all times and all ways for ourselves. Okay? You're at the School of the Masters for yourself. Are you learning to have me discipline you? Or are you learning to self-discipline yourself? Are you doing things because I tell you to do it? Or are you doing things because inside of yourself it says, hey, I want to do this? If I say, roll a peanut along with your nose, that's the easy thing to do because you know that's part of the game, if it's part of the game. And so you roll the peanut along with your nose. Do you feel mortified? Do you feel that you are looking very silly with your nose down the ground and your butt up in the air and you're pushing this peanut along? Do you feel silly? Do you even think about that? Or do you think, you are doing one little test after another little test, harmoniously, joyously, wonderfully, cooperatively doing it without the slightest thing? Or do you think that other people think that you're silly doing this? Remember, other people are going to do silly things too. But if you think that other people think that you're silly doing this, and then you're not getting the benefit from it, because you're doing it with other people's attitudes in mind. And don't do it with other people's attitudes in mind. Only do it with your own attitude in mind. Wise up. Wise up. This is your show. This is your show. The little children who put on tea parties or little plays or what have you, and they pull open an imaginary curtain, or maybe a real one, but they pull it open, and then they're on stage. And then they pretend that they're somebody else. They pretend that they're the show they saw on TV. And who are they doing it for? Do they care if there's anybody out front? Not at all. Do they care if anybody laughs or cries or calls out or applauds to them? Not at all. They're having the time of their life. They see it perfect for themselves. They see themselves as a perfect actor or a perfect singer or a perfect stagehand, whatever may be the case. They see themselves perfect as that. They see themselves doing the job so wonderfully, and they're having fun. But they're not trying to impress anyone else. Oh, you say, child actors and so forth try to impress other people. No. A child actor is merely being himself, and being himself in a structured way. When child actors are performing, they are not expected to memorize the entire play. They are given it little by little, and then they're put on the scene and told to do their part. In fact, a child actor may be given 10 scenes in one day, and each scene may be totally different. One scene, the child actor is crying and unhappy, and they put some onion juice under their eyes, and they cry, and they do all these beautiful things, okay? Then the next scene comes along, and they're supposed to be laughing and having a good time. And so they wipe away all those tears and powder their face so that they look fresh and alive. And they say, now, remember, you're a happy boy now. Okay, yeah, let's go. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. And they play the role of the happy boy. And then the next scene may be a dramatic scene. And they say, okay, now, you're really unhappy. Your dad has left you. Your mother has left you. And you're all by yourself standing at the edge of the road, and nobody cares about you at all. Now your next words are, oh, I don't care about nothing. I want to die. That's all you're going to say. But you say it slowly. I don't care about nothing. I want to die. I want to die. You know, and so you just say, and so the kid plays this role and does a beautiful job. And then these roles are all dubbed into the scene. But he is himself. He is himself. He's thinking how he would feel if he lost his mother and father. How he would feel if he is sad, if he is crying. How he would feel if he is abandoned. He's thinking of these things and playing the role. Now, who is he playing the role for? He's playing the role for himself. Who are you playing the role in the School of the Masters? Who are you playing it for? You're playing it for yourself. Because surely I don't care. That doesn't sound very nice, but I don't care. I don't care if you win, lose, or draw. I don't care if you accomplish this. You may go at it and go at it and go at it. Do children ever fail their grades in school? Of course they do. Does the teacher care? The teacher says, well, Johnny, if you'd applied yourself a little bit more, if you would have not been sick all year, and you would have been able to be in school, well, that's just the way it is, Johnny. We don't want to pass you without having this information in your mind, because when you go on to the next grades in school without this information, you're not going to feel comfortable. It's like, you know what mathematics are. You have addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and other aspects. Well, now, if you have addition 1 year, subtraction another year, and division or multiplication the next year, and then you're sick during the year of multiplication, and then the next year you go on into division, and you never learn multiplication, you're going to be unprepared in a great way, aren't you? You're going to be very empty as a human being, not knowing multiplication. All your friends are going to know multiplication. All the world's going to know multiplication, but you won't. And if you miss the class on phonics when you're in school, if in the third and fourth grade you miss the class on phonics, what is the class on phonics about? It's learning how to sound out words, no matter what the words are, and then because you sound out the way it sounds, you get the idea of what it means. Like Siddhika was saying today, when I said, do you understand what that word means? She said, no, but I understand what you mean. I understand what you're saying. I understand the emotion behind it. You see, if you miss any of that, then you're not blessed. Now, the teacher is not unhappy for you. The teacher is not sorry for you. The teacher might say, well, if you really want to be with the rest of your class, you can go to summer school, and you can study it in summer school, and if you pass, you go right on with your next class. But if you just want to go out and play this summer and have a good time, and then do the class over again, that's all right. Now, that's up to you. That's up to you, whatever you think is what's important to you. And the teacher doesn't say, oh, I'm so sorry for you. Let me take you to my house every night and spend an hour with you and teach you these things that you didn't learn, you know. The teacher can't take that emotional baggage. The teacher cannot take that garbage into her or his consciousness about the students. The teacher gives his best. The teacher speaks the truth that she understands and gives this to the student. And then the student accepts or rejects it. And some students say, oh, that teacher is the hardest teacher. Nobody gets a good grade in her class. Nobody does well in her class. Well, the truth is that her class is no different from anybody else's. It's just that you have something unhappy in your heart about that teacher. And you try to get your mother and dad to feel sorry for you because you didn't study well and you didn't like the teacher. And say, yeah, I'm not going to study on that darn teacher. I don't like that teacher. You know? And who's the loser? Or who's the winner? You are. Because you know what you're doing? You're causing yourself to stay back to have that teacher for another year. Ho, ho, ho. Because that's the third grade teacher, the fifth grade teacher, the seventh grade teacher, whatever the teacher may be. You see, always, always, always we're doing it for ourselves. We're not doing this to make anybody else happy. You certainly aren't going to make me happy if you go to the School of the Masters and become a supermaster. You're not going to make me happy if you go to the School of the Masters and become nothing. It doesn't make any difference. Here is the program, right here. Here is the program. If you will apply yourself to this program 100%, giving yourself without any reservation, you will accomplish it. But if you have any reservations, if you have any hesitation in yourself about doing anything, then what you're doing is you're saying, I'm not going to be a master. Now, is the teacher supposed to feel sorry for the student who doesn't want to do the course? No. The teacher says, you don't want to do the course? Okay, out, out, out. I don't want you messing up the consciousness of the other students. Now, if the teacher were to leave that student in the class who is doing poorly, what would that be? Another lesson for the other students. Could the other students have a continual attitude of positiveness, a continual attitude of being very good, while their friend was not being very good? Their friend could be doing all sorts of things in the class. Their friend could be throwing all sorts of things and doing all sorts of unkind things in the class. And if their friend did that, would that be disruptive to the class? Only if you want to be disruptive, disrupted. If anything goes on in here, now, here we are sitting as a group of people hearing this talk. And as we hear this talk, the telephone rings. We jump up and answer the telephone. Instead of having the telephone on the answering service, so that the answering service says, we are in a class right now, call back in half an hour and be happy to talk to you, or whatever, we jump up and answer the phone. And then we miss the lecture for us. For us, we miss the lecture. The rest of the group is hearing the lecture and hearing whatever benefit is coming from it and is having a great joy from it. But we miss it because we jump up and answer the phone. Now, who is this lecture for? Anyone, answer it for me.
Me.
This lecture is for you. And does anyone have the right to butt in on this lecture and disturb you in any way? No. Does anyone have the right to say to you, hey, I'm knocking at your door, I want you to come and let me in? And you say, who are you? And they say, I'm nobody, I just want to come in. It's cold outside. And you say, well, I'm sorry that I don't know you. Now, the lady next door, she loves to have people come and knock on her door and invite them in for coffee and for sandwiches when they are needing it. But as for ourselves, we don't do that. Oh, the lady next door. Oh, okay. Now, when she knocks at the house of the lady next door, and the lady next door says, oh, no, 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 I don't do that at all. There are places that can help you, Salvation Army and so forth, but no, no, no. Now, number one, why do you create a telephone call happening in the middle of the talk? Why do you create, whoever it may be, somebody wonderful, somebody very wonderful, why do you create that happening Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, or day after day after day, or meeting after meeting? You don't have to. You can just mentally close the telephone off. You can just mentally close the door, close the gate. Jesus spoke about that. He said, when the bridegroom is ready, the virgins who are there with their lamps and oil are there. And the ones who burned up their oil ahead of time and ran out to get some more oil and were left out in the cold, were left out in the cold. And the bridegroom said, I don't know you. The door is closed. I'm going to my wife now. I'm a virgin, and I have my lamp, and I want to come in. I want to be part of this here ceremony. I'm supposed to be here. Do you think he cares? What has he got on his mind? He has on his mind to consummate the marriage vow. He has on his mind the happy time of the wedding. He has on his time not having some silly woman who forgot to have enough oil and wasn't there on time for the whole show to be there. I often wonder what the virgins are doing there. But it's a story that they tell, and it's an interesting concept. Who is the bridegroom doing his program for that evening? For himself. Is he doing it for his wife? No. Who is his wife doing it for? Herself. who is each of the virgins doing it for? Himself. Hey, if this is important to you, and you're a Vestal Virgin, you want to come there and be there and participate in this first night of love, you should be there on time. If necessary, you carry your own jug of extra oil, so you're sure to have enough to take care of things. But, you see, remember, you're doing it for yourself. You're not doing it for the bridegroom, you're not doing it for the bride, you're not doing it for anyone else, you're not shoveling the snow for the neighbors, you're doing it for yourself. Now, if you're doing it for yourself, then why should you complain? If you're going to school, why does a child go to school? Why does a child go to elementary school, grade school, kindergarten, high school, whatever he goes to? Why does a child go there? Because the child wants to go there? Yes. Because the child wants to go there. Do you know there are children in this world who do not go to school? Do you know there are children in this world who do not have teachers coming to their house? Or they going to the schoolhouse or the teacher? There are hundreds and thousands and millions and billions of children on the face of the earth today who are not going to school. So, tell me, who created you going to school when you went to school? You did. You could have been born anywhere else, because you made that choice before you came here. But you could have been born anywhere. You chose to be in that family, in that society that expected you to go to school. You chose that. That's your choice. And if you're going to be a master, be a good master. If you're going to be a master, play the game you have laid out for yourself. Now, we were at court yesterday, and we heard all about Ellen's new responsibilities as an American citizen, and Ingeborg's new responsibility. And the judge said, you have the freedom to change the laws of this nation to be more harmonious with the changing world in which we live. You can change these laws. You can change these laws. You can change these laws. But until you get the laws changed, obey them. Cooperate with the laws of the land until you choose to change them, if that's just your desire to do. But the laws are for you. You created them. You wanted them. You designed them. You created yourself living in the United States or living in Russia or living in Afghanistan. You created yourself living in any culture on the face of the world. And, hey, look, how many people are living in Afghanistan not following the rules of the country of Afghanistan? Hundreds, maybe more. These are ambassadors. These are people who are with the American services that are over there. These are professors, teachers in schools who have come from the United States to teach in these schools. They're not cooperating with their laws. Their laws say that your wife must wear a bandana over her face, you know. Their laws say that you must eat certain foods at certain times of the day. This is their religious culture, and it's not your religious culture. So you don't have to do that. You see, you could live in an area, in a world, in a country where it is totally opposite of your own cultural mores, and you could live your own cultural mores. You're the rules of your own culture. You could do that just by being there under the right auspices. We create our own world. Now, all of you, you like the way I say now and then, huh? All of you are creating yourself in the School of the Masters. All of you are creating yourself as ready to enter into the School of the Masters with 100% of your talent, your ability, your genius, whatever you have, you're going to go 100% into it. And you're going to give yourself 100% to it. Okay, like in grade school, like in high school and college and life, there will be people who will fail. This is a terrible statistic to give you, but in the United States, one out of every two marriages fails. Now, why does one out of every two marriage fail? Because that's what the people want. We heard of one couple who were married 70 years. 70 years come January. And the man was born in 1898. Amazing. Amazing. But it's not so amazing. He lived in Mexico where they didn't have all the best sanitation and the best health conditions. He lived in perhaps a poverty community wherever he was. He had many problems wherever he was. But he came through wonderfully. And his wife came through wonderfully. Why? Because it's all up here in your mind. Your health is in your mind. Your wealth is in your mind. All experiences in life is in your mind. All experiences are in your mind. They are. And whatever you think about them, whatever you dream for yourself about them, this is your experience. Can you visualize this? Can you see the intensity of how important I'm pointing this out to you? Because it is your choice, only your choice. It is your decision whether you are going to express your master consciousness or not. Yeah. You arrive at this point of master awareness, and I come up to you and I say, all right, here is your crown. When you put this crown on, it says you are the greatest master that ever existed. That you are fantastic. All your choices are yours and done completely. And then you say, I put a crown on, huh? Other people will know I'm a master. I don't really want to do that. But you see, it's a game you chose to play. So don't second guess it. If the crown comes your way, and it may well do this, and you are a master in consciousness, put the crown on, and you know what will happen? Can anyone tell me?
Nobody will see.
You will be invisible. Nobody will see it. It's like the king's magical, wonderful new clothes. They weren't there. But everyone believed they were there because they felt they just were not able to see them. You have this wonderful talent in you. This wonderful genius and this wonderful capability in you of doing anything you want to do, of fulfilling any dream you want to fulfill, of accomplishing any awareness you want to accomplish. But with it, you must take the responsibility. You must take the responsibility of standing up behind who you are. Who are you now? Are you capable of doing anything? Are you sensitive to doing anything? Are you a genius in everything you do? You can be. You can be. I know I have all sorts of experiences in my life. And as I have these experiences, people come up and they say, oh, this can't be done. And I say to them, why do you say that? Well, it can't be done because this is not right, and that's not right, and the other thing's not right. I say, okay, you go your way, I will do it. And they come back, and it's done. And it is done beautifully. It is done wonderfully. It is done with imagination. Why didn't they do it? Why were they reluctant to do things? They were reluctant to do things because it meant more work for them. But you know, I think of this person, and I'll give you his name in a minute. I think of this person, and I think, here you are going through life with a name like you have, and yet every once in a while you act like a very bad person, a very sad person, very unhappy person. With a name like you have, you act as though you are stupid at times. With a name that you have, you go through life making trouble for yourself by saying you can't do something. And do you know what that name is? Any of you happen to know what I'm thinking about?
God.
No, you said?
God.
Well, just about. King. Robert King. Bob's last name is King.
Oh.
And Bob was telling me he couldn't do this and he couldn't do that and he couldn't do the other thing. And so I said, Bob, don't ever say that in front of me. Ever. And so, as I told you the other day, we had a vent. I wanted to reduce the size of it. And he said, well, this flange goes up there and these pop rivets are in there already. I said, Bob, make it so. And he went in there. In not more than 12 to 14 minutes, he sawed it off. He popped on new pop rivets, and it was done solid. And he put this thing over the hole. I said, I don't want something standing up and bubbling up over the hole. I don't want something to be in the way. And he said, well, that can't be done because this has to be. You have to have this bumper there to keep water from getting down in there and things like that. And I said, no, that's not true. I said, the concrete should be slanted so the water goes to the drain. Well, he put this beautiful cover in there, a beautiful sheet of aluminum, solid, you can walk on it, and it was very secure. I said, Bob, that's excellent. I said, you are really doing fine. I'm proud of you. And then, on the last day of our encounter with this group, I said to them, you have forgotten several things, but the primary one is to have a cover over the entrance to go under the house. And Mike said, we'll take care of that. We'll build you something very secure and very... Bob says, oh, I'm working on that. So, Mike was here working, and it was late in the evening, and Bob calls up. He says, I want to come out. And we said, you're welcome. What is it you want to do? He said, I want to put that cover in over the entranceway to the lower level. And I said, fine, come right along. And I said, Mike is here right now, but come along. So he waited until Mike was gone. And then he came and he put a piece of tin foil, you know what tin foil is, over this cover. And I said it had to be secure in case anyone stepped on there. As it was, they built a concrete berm around it, which they shouldn't have done. But then Ellen was putting her ladder there and set it on top of there, and it bent in. And I came out and I saw that it was so fragile that I stomped on it, and the thing just folded in half virtually. Now, you see, when you have a name and you don't live up to your name, then you are mud. You follow me? If your name is woman and you act like a man, your name is mud. If your name is king and you act like a slave, or you act like a knave, then you are not a king. And he had this big diamond on the side of his car where he was having his second business, and it says king, and then it said something else underneath it. Well, here he, and his beautiful red, solid red truck with this diamond painted on the side. How is he going to go on through the rest of his life? If he does not follow the rules with us, as gentle and loving as we are, what is he going to do with people who are not as definite as we are? What is he going to do? And how long can you go on violating the rules and still live? And I mean this. He will be dead before he is ready to retire, and he's going to retire very shortly. I don't want him dead, but he's going to be dead because he is violating all of the principles that make up his life, the valuable things, the rules, the program that he has set for himself. What is his name? King. How does he act? Not like a king. What is he tell us? He said, well, I learned to do this and this and this. I can do anything. And then he says he can't do it. Now, that's okay. That's perfectly okay. I tell him, okay, if you can't do it, I'll do it. Or I'll have it done. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it at all. And if you put in the concrete incorrect, I'll have it ripped out and have it put in correct. And, oh, but that's so expensive. It's never expensive to do something right. It's always expensive to do something incorrect or wrong. Do you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand why I take such patience and such love and such dedication with all of you to work on your spiritual life? Because I know where you are. You're like, here's your spiritual life right here. You know, actually, it's all of you. But here's your awareness of your spiritual life. And you're right here, bumping against this pipe here, wanting to get through to your spiritual life. And I say, hey, flow with it. Don't go impeding yourself, causing yourself to feel uncomfortable and unhappy about it. Flow with it. Flow with it. Flow with the program. Wise up. Stop beating your head against the wall. Stop making trouble for yourself. You're doing it for yourself. You might as well enjoy it. Mr. King is doing his life for himself. But what is the story that he would tell you? He would say, well, I have back problems. And he says, I'm not able to do the work I used to do. And he says, we have a lot of internal problems too. My wife just had this thing and that thing, and our son had this, and our daughters are doing this here. And what is the truth? What is the truth? Bob, I'm Bob. I'm King. That's my name. I was born a king. And I feel wonderful, glorious. I live in my temple of the eternal spirit, whole and perfect. My wife is my creation. I create her whole and perfect. I see her surrounded by my pure white light of love and representing wholeness and perfection in everything in her body. What would happen to his wife? Ooh-wee! I see my work fulfilling and rewarding. He keeps telling me he's not paid enough money. I see everything I'm doing wonderful. Now, what would be one of the simplest things that Bob could do? Bob could do the job we asked them to do in perfect love and measure overflowing to make sure that everything is in perfectly done. Now, he works from 7 in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon. Can he get his work done during that time? He does. And he leaves at 3:30 promptly, sometimes before. But he leaves promptly. Does he get the work done? Yep. Does he get paid? Yep. Then what's he complaining about that he doesn't get the work done? When you work efficiently, you will get all the work done that you want to get done. When you don't work efficiently, you know what happens? You feel frustrated. You feel things just don't fall into place. You feel you can't do anything. But when you like yourself, you will do everything you do beautifully, wonderfully, never rushed, and never saying, I think this will work, I hope this will work. You know it works. When we went to visit the baby yesterday, as we were talking to the parents and talking to the baby and talking to ourselves, we were seeing pure love surrounding that very confused circumstance. That whole room was absolute confusion. There were 8 or 10 bodies in there, 12, 14 bodies in there, mulling around in one bedroom apartment, very small living room, very small. Not bad, nothing wrong with it. Everything was in order, everything was nicely arranged. But there was confusion there. Well, if there were that many bodies in that one room coming to see that little baby, of course there'd be confusion. Oh, no. Oh, no. You see, when you have a little baby and you present that baby to the world, you present that baby to the world and say, here is our baby. Or, here is our baby, depending upon your mental attitude. And then you say, you can look, but don't touch. This is our baby. You can kiss our baby's foot, but not the cheek. You know, that's our baby. And they tell you the rules. But you see, this was their first child, and they didn't know any rules yet. They didn't know any rules. But what they did know was that they wanted this confusing group of people there for a very definite reason. They wanted us there to do what? To bless that child. To surround that child with our pure white light of love so that that child would go forth from this day forward untouched by anything in their environment, untouched by anything in their world, by any circumstances whatsoever. Because it's a master. It's a master. And that child acted in perfect, normal ways, just as gentle and peaceful. But the parents were a little shook. They didn't know how to act. They didn't know what to expect. And because of that, the blessing that could have been overwhelming was good, but not overwhelming. You see, when you go to a place like that, you give your total self to the circumstances. You saw how I did it. If they didn't want to open the doors in one way, I opened them in another way. But I gave totally of love. I gave totally of peace, totally of harmony. And they felt that. And Jeff was wanting to run off even before we were all ready to leave. Of course, we'd been ready to leave before that. But he wanted to run off because he felt his child was in good hands. You see, when you do anything, do it with your whole heart. When you offer your child to the world, offer it with your whole heart. When you speak to anyone, speak with your whole heart. When you listen in the school of the master, listen with your whole heart. Flow with it. Go with it. You're ready. But if you ever stupidly call yourself by a royal name and act like a slave, the law, the world, doesn't know how to act. And because it doesn't know how to act, it's going to act in a negative way for you. And when it acts in a negative way for you, then what's going to happen? When it acts in a negative way for you, it's going to void anything that you have done up to that point. We talked about the 6 month, 3 hour meditation every day. And if you don't do it perfectly, you have to start over again, if you want to have it. And I guarantee everyone, at the end of 6 months, you will be an accomplished master, if you do it exactly like it is designed. And if you don't do it exactly like it's designed, you won't have it. Now, whether that's a fact or a fiction, whether this is something I've made up, or whether it's something real, is of no consequence. And the only thing is, if you believe it, it is done for you. And if you believe the snap of a finger, you are a fulfilled master, you'll be it. But until you are totally in charge of your own consciousness, of your own attitudes, of your own life, of your own directions and goals for yourself, then you're still playing at it. But that's okay. I'll play with you. That's what I'm here for. And I love you all very much.